The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
Family-owned Palermo Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, located at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
In screaming woods and empty rooms, or gloomy vaults and sunken tombs, where monks and nuns in dust decay, and shadows dance at close of day, where the bat dips on wing and special choirs on breezes sing, where swords of ancient battles clash, and shimmering shades for freedom dash, where the hounds of hell take flight, and ghost clouds race across the night, where silver webs of spiders weave and star-crossed lovers take their leave, where curses lay the spirits low and mortal fear footsteps fear to go, where death holds life in grim embrace, its lines etched on the sinner's face. Wherever the march of time is flaunted, voices cry,
"This place is haunted. Get out!"
Brought to you by WKTV. I'm your ghost hunting host, Wayne Preston Curtis Thomas. Welcome to our 50th episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast. As always, we ask that you please keep an open mind about things that you might not easily believe as we explore the mysterious. Once again, welcome back, my co-host, Brandon Jose.
Hello, everybody.
Brandon, 50, number 50.
Yep.
Milestone for us. I couldn't think of any a better guest, really, to have on our 50th episode. Three legends of the paranormal, all of them incredible authors, researchers, and investigators in search of the truth. First of all, let's meet our very special guest co-host, Kathleen Rydell Tetson.
Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here today.
And she's here for a very important reason, because she has a special connection with our featured guest, the Duchesnes. Would you like to intro and welcome them to the show?
Absolutely. I love these people. They actually introduced me, or one of the first paranormal teams that introduced my sister and I into what a real paranormal investigation is about. And it's not like TV, okay? And they're one of the tried and true, the ones I trusted probably more than any of the others, two very objective and very qualified paranormal investigators. And I'm so happy to be here with you two. And that is Nicole and Rob Duchesne. Hi, guys.
Hi, guys. Hi. I love seeing you again.
Yeah, you too. You too. We had some good experiences.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I remember the Terror Hotel.
Yes.
This one that didn't make the book?
Oh, no, it did. It's actually the Terra Sin, but we had so much crazy activity the night that we investigated that Rob and Nick named it the Terror Hotel, I
the
think.
Terror Hotel.
Yeah. Those were the good old days, huh?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I still remember running up the stairs in your camera right in my face, and I can barely breathe because I ran up three flights of stairs.
You handled it great, though, based on your lack of oxygen.
Yeah.
But that was a great investigation. Now, you guys really did introduce Bev and I to investigating. And thank God for that, because we learned a lot. So now we're experienced, right?
That's right.
We've been to the mountain, baby.
Yes. And now we're going back down.
No, that's a, I don't want to do the too far down part because I don't think I'm going to like what's down way down.
Now, you guys are making a reference to this book here, The Haunted Travels of Michigan. It's just one of your books in the series. Yeah. One of your books in the series.
Right.
And the chapter is on the Terrace Inn.
Yes.
And what's now, was this like early on?
For me, it was. When was it back, guys? Around 2007 when we did the Terrace Inn?
I think so. Yeah.
Probably around
yeah.
then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quite a long time.
2007. Yeah. It's right. been a while.
It has. Yes. My gosh, I can't believe it. Even though I've seen you a couple of other times since, but to actually work together, I think that was mm-hmm. one of the last times. So, but yeah.
Terrace Inn Bar. Yep.
Now, at the end of the chapter, you know, in this poem, it says, this place is haunted.
Yes.
At the end of the chapter, Nikki almost says that word for word, that this, you know, this location was haunted.
Yes.
That's saying something to come right out and make that statement. It's a pretty bold statement. You better have darn good evidence to support that.
Yes.
And maybe you guys can talk a little bit about that, you know, what you did come across there. I know that you had good EVPs, and you can find the EVPs on Kat's website, I believe.
Yes, yes, you can. Well, Rob and Nick, do you guys want to kind of give an overview of that?
For me, it mainly just be what happened in the basement.
Yeah. So oh, yes. Oh, the yes. Boy, oh, my God. Yes. The camera.
Yeah, the camera. Yeah, I walked around with a camera in my hand everywhere.
Yes, yes. And it's funny because that was the first investigation where I had somebody walking around with a camera, like just like that. Yeah. It's different when the news does it, of course, but
right. Oh yeah.
Oh my God, that was such an amazing investigation.
Right.
Terrace Inn is deep in my heart as one of my favorites.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh yes.
That's nice to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody out there that's looking for some place to go.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a place to go. for sure. Yeah. Well, I know that when we arrived, I'm not sure with Kat and Bev, but I know that the staff strategically put some of us in rooms that had the most activity.
Room 211 and 308.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yep. And I remember there one of my investigators, Julie, she was put, I do believe, in 308, where the suicide took place. If correct me if I'm wrong on that, Kat, but and that was the first time I'd ever seen her on an investigation, not like a room. She halfway through the night, she let me know I'm going to be switching rooms. I can't sleep in there. I don't like the feelings that's coming to me from in there. And I've never seen her do that before. Mm. So for me, that was interesting. And this was before I even knew the history of the room. When we came back for a paranormal conference, that's when I learned that there was a suicide in that room. And of course I told Julie, and Julie's like, I knew it. I just knew it.
How did you find out about that suicide? Because boy, we sure researched the heck out of that.
Oh, all the staff there told us about it, that there was a suicide in that room of a man. Wow. They didn't get into much detail. So to be honest with you, it's just from the staff.
Oh, okay. So word of mouth. Gotcha.
It's
okay.
Word of mouth from them. They nicknamed it the suicide room. And
okay. All right.
Okay. Yeah, they've nicknamed it the suicide room. So but to Julie, that was validation. It's like, I knew it. I just knew.
Well, something. She, you know, she loves that stuff.
Oh, my God, yeah, yes.
Give me more. But yeah, Beth and I, you know, we went through death records over the decades, yeah. And we didn't see anything specifically related.
Right.
Of course, you know, there's a lot of death records. We could have missed it.
Which is totally true for anybody. I mean, yeah. It doesn't matter what city you're in. The death records are hit or miss.
I don't know if anyone does more research than what you guys do in search of the truth. You know, I wrote the article on you guys, and that's what I pointed out. Maybe Mackinac Island Todd Clements. I think he researched
a lot
for his book too. But something that stuck in my mind was that paranormal logbook that they had before you even got there.
Yes.
Yes, that was cool. Not many people think of doing that.
Yeah, and I think they had people over a decade's worth of stories that they or experiences they had. And when we saw the file, it probably was about an inch and a half thick already. I'm sure it's even more so now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See, we ran into that at the Mitten here in Grand Rapids, their old firehouse. And then they had a log book when we got there already. Yeah. And then I started a log book for Nick Finks, because there was so much activity going on there. I thought they deserved something where they could build on it. But yeah, apparently the owners of the Terrace Inn, they got the keys and in this paranormal logbook at the same time. Say, here you go. Good
part
luck.
Of the history.
Right. Hello, welcome. Here's your place.
Yeah. Now, Nick, I don't think you guys, Rob, you weren't there, but I did go back a few times after we went and on a controlled investigation like we had. And we actually got validation of the boy in the basement that you had thought was there. We had a baby carriage move in the basement. We got that on video. And we got an EVP. We were running a session down there, and we're asking the typical questions, you know, and we left a recorder. When we left the recorder going, and we got a young man's voice that said, "Fools."
You know, that sounds, I'm going to have Rob tell the story in a second, but the story from before, remember the entity wanted to show us that he was there.
Yes.
And so that ties in perfectly with that.
Yes.
Rob, did you want to tell them what happened to us?
Yeah, I mean, the part that would tie in perfectly would be that after we had done our initial EVP session down there and we left the recorder, we also got, we said, if there's anything you'd like to tell us, feel free to leave a message. And we got this very soft male voice that just said, "Come back." So
I remember, it seems like you told us that. My gosh.
Oh, first they were telling you to leave, and then they told you to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's what I read, right?
It could have been two different entities, you know.
Yep. And another thing that had happened was we had said we'd asked a question if there were, I think it was Harrison, wasn't it, with the two prove it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was it.
I wanted to make sure I had the right location. But we had a situation where we had asked if there was anybody in the basement with us. And when we had said, "Is there anyone here?" on EVP, we caught a voice that had said to prove it. And immediately after that, we heard a noise behind a locked door. And it took quite a bit of time to figure out how to get back there, but you could climb over a bunch of stuff that was in storage. And when we got into the room, there had been a light that had turned on behind it. It was a pull cord.
Yes.
And there was no way to get to that pull cord unless you had climbed over piles and piles of junk, mm-hmm. which was not particularly easy for a person of my physique. But we did get in there and find out that there was no way that light turned itself on otherwise.
Right.
Oh, nice. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And one photo that you guys had in Kat's book there, it has orbs. I mean, there's so many orbs. It looks like bubbles, but
it's dust.
I mean, I've seen that with night vision camera. And I'm like, first time I saw that, my first investigation, I'm going, "What is that?" And the guy goes, "That's dust." And I'm going, "I'm breathing in all that dust."
Yes.
Oh,
yes, you are.
I started wearing a face mask before it was fashionable.
Yes.
Jeez.
The worst part about all the dust there is the fact that what you're capturing is just the dust that's within like the first inch in front of the camera. So that's just what you have in that immediate area. So you don't even want to imagine how much dust is around the rest.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It grossed me out when I saw that and I figured out what that was. So anybody that has photos with orbs in it, good luck.
Do you think we'll ever let go of orbs as spirit? Do you think we'll ever lose that?
You know, I think at one point there was a window of opportunity to lose that.
Yes.
And then certain TV shows
came
out and they started the orb thing right back up. And unfortunately, I think it's probably going to be here to stay.
Yeah,
I know. I know. No one wants to believe it's not a ghost.
Everybody. Right. I know. It just, they won't let it go.
No, they won't. It's like, it's got a tail to it. I'm like, yeah, it's right.
I think another problem people have with orbs is that you can occasionally see an actual orb in a haunted area. So yes. If you can see the bouncing orbs of light, which we've seen in a few locations, people think that because that is a phenomenon, that obviously the dust must be another form of that.
Now, I've been on a case where they've seen orbs with their naked eye that had color. And at the same time, we had cold spots.
Right.
So,
we don't know that that's a spirit. It could be a ball of energy that's moving through. I mean, we have charged particles in the atmosphere. EMF flow varies. You know, it can be a variety of different possibilities, and it could just be a ball of energy moving through. It doesn't
a little vortex.
Right. I mean, it doesn't have to be a conscious spirit, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Duchesne's, you guys got early start. Maybe you can mention that a little bit, because you both grew up in haunted locations.
Yes, we did. I grew up in Ionia, and the former homeowner before us had committed suicide in the backyard. Did not know this until my 20s, because my parents didn't want to tell us kids. They were afraid that we'd be freaked out and scared. What they didn't realize is I was already freaked out and scared. Because as soon as moving in the house, when I was 7 years old, I knew something was wrong. And everything was proven to be wrong when I would start having toys go flying across the room, and my doors swinging open and slamming shut, my windows and everything. So I was already terrified. So even with them telling me, it wouldn't have made any difference.
Yeah. And with me, I grew up in a house, when I was a child, every time I went into my basement, I had this tendency to think that I was seeing what I called at that time Indians, but politically correct Native Americans. And I kept telling my mom that there were all these Native American spirits in my basement. And the first thing she made me do was take down a poster I had of a Sioux warrior, because she thought it was scaring me. So then after that, I just kept seeing them anyways. And eventually I ended up talking to a Native American historian who told me that there had been a major massacre that had happened exactly where my house was at. There is a historic marker for the massacre, but it definitely whitewashes what happened. It just says that there was a Native American village that mysteriously disappeared. Mysteriously disappeared when the U.S. military went through and wiped it out, but it did mysteriously disappear.
Yeah, that's a special interest to me in our area, because Michigan is all about Native Americans. All our cities are named after them. Michigan is, you know, there's so much to it. And you talk about the massacres where entire tribes were eliminated. That's got to leave some kind of either residual imprint or just bad feelings, enough bad feelings that some unfinished business, which is of the worst kind, some revenge. You know, there's stories, Mackinac Island has them, where an entire tribe had been massacred, and then now they haunt the woods. I think there's another one over by Detroit, Fort Detroit there. The Sauk Indians, I believe, were massacred, completely wiped out.
That has fucking historic Fort Wayne.
Fort Wayne, that just has to leave bad feelings enough, I think, for spirits to stick around. So, and then what if they don't speak English? It's pretty hard to like calm them down and get them at rest, I would think.
Right.
Yeah, that's a special interest to me, Rob. I would think that would have been especially spooky. Ghosts are spooky enough. I kept looking for them because my grandfather was a ghost hunter. So he trained me at 5 years old how to communicate with them. So wherever I went, oh, this is a haunted barn, or this is haunted, that's haunted. We were just hoping it was, but I kind of gave up on the idea. I didn't grow up in a haunted house like you guys did, but my grandpa was spooky enough that I had it in me, but I didn't really pay much attention to it. What time did you guys get started? You got started separately? You started, Nicole, your group?
Yep. West Michigan Ghost Hunter Society. We started in 1999.
Okay. And then the Reverend, you started your own radio show.
Yeah. Initially, we started out with a ghost hunters club that we called the Kalamazoo Ghost Hunters in 1993. And then I believe it was probably 2000, we started doing radio show and reincorporated in 2003 as W Paranormal Incorporated for the radio show.
Okay. Every now and then you guys are freezing up, but it's not too bad. We've had a lot worse. So, but every once in a while, so no problem there.
Yep.
And then you guys combine forces. The Reverend's on your team, Nicole, and then you're on the radio show. But see, now I knew Nicole as Bray.
Me too.
You did too, right, Rob?
I did too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you wrote under that name.
Yep.
This book here, Michigan's Nightlife.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nicole Bray and the Reverend Robert Duchesne. At some point, something happened.
Yeah, he finally convinced me to marry him.
When was that?
Oh my God.
Tough let me questions. See.
We got married in 2014, and he proposed to me at the end of a tour in 2013.
Oh,
so nice. We were sitting here in Civil War dress. Right. And then he proposed to me at Bronson Park in Kalamazoo after one of our tours.
Very nice. I've been on one of your tours. You invited Kim and I walked with on the Grand Rapids tour last year. And I'm a little bit gimpy. I got a bad leg, you know, and so I had no problem though.
Me too.
Yeah, I had no problem. So anybody that thinks, well, I'm not healthy enough, forget that noise. You can do the tour with these guys.
Yeah.
How many different
books? In our case, you know, I'm walking with a cane, so we can't go too fast.
Yeah, I kept up with you. I kept up with you, Rev.
Yes, you did.
And then, so I got this book for Christmas, The Nightlife, Michigan's Nightlife. And Reverend Robert says, oh, no, you got to get some of the other books. So, Ghost of Grand Rapids. And this is also what you call your tour of Grand Rapids, right?
Yep.
And then you have, what's the Kalamazoo book called?
Haunted History of Kalamazoo.
And then that's what your Kalamazoo tour is called.
Yes.
Yes.
And then do you have another book or two in there?
Well, the very first one was Lansing, which was actually not by choice. By choice, the first one was supposed to be Kalamazoo, but the publisher really, really pushed to have a book about hauntings from the state capitol. So I eventually gave in and we wrote about Lansing. Rob had been there like on field trips. I had never been there, not even on a field trip to the state capitol building. So here I'm now writing a book about an area of Michigan I never even stepped foot in. So not exactly the way I really wanted to start out, but I think it came out pretty good.
We did end up getting a private tour from the state historian of the Capitol building. And that was interesting because they were giving us pretty much the story of where all the hauntings and the deaths happened. And at the same time, there was a group of missionaries there that were following us around to hear the haunted stories. I thought that was kind of funny. And then we had.
Yeah, so they got the tour that they weren't expecting, that's for sure.
So you're authors of a few books, and then you do the tours, and then you say October, you have the tours coming up again.
Yes. Yeah. Just like everything else, like with paranormal conventions, COVID hit and it made a big impact on the tours. We were able last year to pull off about four or five of them. And then this year it's shortened it as well because we never knew what was going on with the mask and with the social distancing rules, what the CDC wanted. So once again, we're having a shortened tour season. And hopefully, let's pray that next year we're right back and strong because I have tons of ideas of cemetery tours and other things that I would like to do. That's
been
put on the back burner for about 2-3 years now.
I'm going to watch for that.
And then,
And then we have a friend that does little cemeteries that I think he'd be signing up for that one.
Unfortunately, you know, COVID, which was horrible, and thankfully this was the first time that I was actually grateful that my parents are gone, so they didn't have to experience all this.
How many cases do you think you've been, or different locations or cases that you've done?
Oh dear God.
Yeah, I know. Kat, you got any idea too? Because I'm going to ask you the same.
Well, for me, I mean, lockdown was a long, boring time. I actually counted the ones I still kept, and there were 334 cases I investigated. Wow. And that didn't include the residential that we did. And that's not all the public ones we did either.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And then Duchesne's, I'm guessing you guys are up there too, way up there. Oh gosh,
yes, we're way up there. Yeah. I was going to say between 300 and 400 probably, or a little over 4. Rob's probably even higher than mine.
Never really counted. So I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. I tried to get a count from Brandon and I, and we're there for a while. We were really putting them out. We couldn't hardly keep up. And then we figured
we're doing what, 3-4 a month for like a couple of years there. So it was hard to keep up.
And then some of them, they just don't go away. I mean, you're on the case for 1 year.
Well, sure. That's what happened with us on the Whitney restaurant in Detroit. We investigated that for a full year. So it does.
I think you're psychic because you keep, Kat, you keep bringing stuff up right before I can say it. Because I was going to say that you both had did the Whitney. Now, Kat, you're maybe more significant because that's kind of where you got your inspiration. The fire started for you
with
that you took. But you guys were at the Whitney, and we've all been at some of the same locations.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about the terrace. You brought another team in there. Like a year later, you said, and then that's when that carriage moved.
Yes.
And it actually went over a pipe. It didn't just move across, and you put a level on the floor. It was complete. Right.
Yeah.
If anything, it went uphill. It didn't go downhill.
When we recorded the carriage, I was there, and there was no pipe initially. It moved about 18 inches, and you're right, we had a level. And we checked, and the floor was relatively flat. And at night, we put the carriage back in place, and we did put it over a pipe against the wall. And in the morning, when we came back to that room, the carriage was once again in the center of the room where we had left it.
Yeah. You confirmed a lot of the stuff that the Duchesnes had talked about the year before in that basement, whether there was a child in that basement.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it was just confirmation, you know, one team comes in after the other.
Absolutely. And when we got that, the voice of that young man, and he sounded like a young guy around 13 or 14, and he said, "Fools," after we had left, it was so clear. It was like class A. That is so incredibly rare, but it confirms everything that, you know, Nick and Rob, you guys identified on the very first investigation. It was incredible.
Right. Yeah,
that is really cool when more than one team can validate the next team's findings. I mean, that makes it my favorite.
Yes.
Oh, I love that. Not when it's just one team, when it's multiple teams and we keep coming up with the same stuff. That's what I love.
Yeah, I love that. When they came in there, supported everything you guys had said the year before. I'm thinking they were right on.
Yeah,
you guys were right on.
I have a feeling at the Terrace Inn, I'm sorry for interrupting. I think at the Terrace Inn, there's layers in there. You know, it has such a history with Chautauqua and Abbey Suite, which was another thing, another EVP we got, and we tracked her down. There's so many spirit levels in there. I think it's not uncommon to find multiple responses from different eras. Don't you guys think so?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I like
when you,
I like when you can tell whether it's a male, female, young,
yes,
sometimes just by the tone. Unless, yes, of course, you have some, mm-hmm, kind of a trickster.
Well, that can sometimes happen, but I'm pretty sure that was not at the Terrace Inn.
Right.
But, you know, I've had bed and breakfast owners try and, you know, trick us.
I've stayed at haunted bed and breakfasts, and I tell them, I want the most haunted room,
yeah,
that you have. And you can go to the Terrace Inn, and they could, 211 and 308. So,
yeah. Now, I stayed in room 211. I think it was 211. Yeah. And the bed started shaking around 2 o'clock.
Oh, geez.
And it's like, that's it. Okay. Validation here.
Wow.
I'm alone in the room. So,
right. Now, we're talking Petoskey. So, very top of the Lower Peninsula. That's where you have to go if you want to stay at that haunted location. The Whitney is over in Detroit. Now, Duchesne's, did you find that very haunted too, the Whitney?
I've never been to it. Have you?
Actually, we never been to the Whitney. We had a friend that had a paranormal team that went in and then let us know what she got and shared her evidence with us, which is another big thing that I love with teams, is when they're open with their evidence so we can start, yeah, validating each other.
Yeah.
So I have never had the pleasure of going to the Whitney. Everything was based on this group that went in and what evidence that they had caught.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they're like three levels, or when you have all this square footage, I think two teams work out. So Brandon and I teamed up. He was on a different team early on in our careers. And I had those guys come to where we had three floors and just all this square footage. It's hard to do. And if you're only there 3-4 hours, now you guys seem like you were there for a couple of days.
At the Whitney or Terrace Inn?
Terrace. You got, seem like you were there. It wasn't
a
just
a whole weekend. It was a whole weekend. And I went back three other weekends after that. And we spent the whole weekend there. So yeah. I put in, God, I don't know, whole weekends, right, whatever that is, yeah, hours and hours of audio and video.
Otherwise you show up, you know, 2-4 hours and you hope that you're going to catch something, and well, yes, good luck. If you're at, right, that happens to be the time when they're ready to talk, yeah, you might get something.
The thing with the Terrace Inn, the insulation is not good. It's an old hotel, which is what I love about it. It's so atmospheric. But we actually had a team on the top floor and we were on the main floor. So there was a floor in between us and we could still hear them talking. So even, oh, you know, though it's a big place, if the insulation isn't good, you do get bleed. So you have to be really careful with EVPs.
Yeah, you got more people, you have more chance for contamination.
Yes, right? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I understand that. Now, Duchesne's, Kalamazoo area, and maybe Allegan County, what's the spookiest places around in that area?
Hey, Rob, you get to go first. You grew up in this area.
You know, I hate to say it, I've never really had anything that was particularly spooky to me in Kalamazoo, except for growing up in a haunted house, not understanding what paranormal activity was. It would be in the Three Rivers area, it would be the only area I've ever been spooked out. And that was, small church that had been rumored to have been used by Al Capone for different purposes. And when they were digging up the church, they actually did find two bodies in the floor there. And all the rumors ended up being that it was supposed to be Al Capone related, but it was actually some of the old priests that had been buried in the floor as a show of honor. Yeah. But what we ended up capturing was probably the only time I was scared enough that I took off running. With my size, I don't run anyways. But there were three of us in there doing EVP in this old church, and we don't know what it was. There was no communication between any of the three of us. And we just simultaneously all picked up our recorders and took off running to the car. I played it on a radio show several times. And when we get to the car, we have an EVP that's very breathy and it says, stay out with those beautiful colored lights. And we were using red flashlights so we wouldn't interfere with the night vision. So wow. We'd never actually been back there.
That's quite an EVP.
Yeah.
usually you're lucky if you get a word or two.
Yeah, I didn't hear the part about the beautiful colored lights until I was working with Todd Bates, who was with Haunted Voices Radio, one of the experts on EVP. And he was teaching me how to analyze the audio better. And I sent him that file and he asked me if I'd heard the second part of it. So we just thought it said stay out for years. But then there's this mumbled part at the end. And I guess it said, and you can tell now, but we couldn't tell originally, but it said with those beautiful colored lights.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a cool EVP.
Were they cemented in the floor?
Cut out there, but I believe you were asking me if they were cemented into the floor.
Right.
They had put them in the dirt, and then they just put the wood flooring and the foundation over top of it. So okay. Whatever the foundation had been there, it didn't appear to have any concrete to it at all. It was an older building. So I think they more or less just lifted the floorboards and put them down in there. There were two holes in the floor where you could see where they had removed them when we were there, but that was about it.
In one of your books, you talk about Western Michigan University, and they had entombed somebody in one of the halls there.
Yeah.
There's the founder, actually.
Founder. There's two of them. There is two different buildings on Western Michigan University campus where the founders of the building are actually entombed into the building.
Yeah.
The most well-known is East Hall, of course. But, you know, right now I am writing about Michigan State University, doing a solo book on that. And it's already mentioned in our first book, The Paranormal Lansing, but right now we're creating a book just for Michigan State University. And there's a hall in there, it's called Fee Hall, or it was a residence hall. And then when they start bringing in medical department, and then they start needing cadavers, unfortunately, the second and third floor is where they would do all the embalming and bring in all the cadavers. And the poor kids that were still residents had to be residents on the first floor. And there was all these reports of blood and embalming fluid leaking from the ceiling onto them. I'm sorry, but if there's any hall on MSU campus that should have the most hauntings, I would think that would be that. Not only because of dead bodies, but the trauma to these poor kids.
Oh my gosh. You're
studying and all of a sudden blood and embalming fluid is coming down.
Just so happens our next featured guest is a student at Michigan State.
Really?
Yeah. Ben, he's actually done a lot of investigations at Michigan State, so he'd be a good one to get in contact with.
There we go.
That's going to be great follow-up on that one.
Yeah.
No doubt. You talk about the State Theater in Kalamazoo. I've been there. I've went to Western, so I was a student at Western Michigan. But I've been to the State Theater concerts there, and the woodwork there is just fantastic. The carvings there.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
That is one gorgeous theater.
What are some of the other places, like historically, because I know you guys are you're into the paranormal, but you're also into the history of it and the architecture. So what are some of the other places that you've been to that compare to that?
Well, Henderson Castle, of course, another absolute gorgeous place. It's a bed and breakfast and a restaurant, I do believe. The restaurant part is still open. I might be wrong on that with COVID, so don't quote me in stone on that one.
Yeah, I've never been to the Henderson.
Brandon, I've been twice.
Oh, Brandon, yeah. You've been to Henderson?
I've been in there. I haven't investigated it though, but I have been in the building.
Yeah,
really.
Danny Holright.
We didn't get any evidence during the investigations, but Nick, you're right. It's beautiful.
It is.
It's
very
beautiful.
Danny Holroyd keeps inviting us, but it doesn't follow through with it. So I'm still anxious to get in there. Maybe someday. I guess you can do events there, your weddings.
Yes. And it's not cheap. It is not
yes,
cheap.
Yes. Absolutely. No, it is not cheap.
Yeah. Now, other places in Allegan County, I'm wondering, Duchesne's, have you been to the Allegan County? The jail museum?
We haven't investigated it, but we visited it. A good friend of ours, Rick Wade, does a lot of investigations there.
Right.
I know he says it's extremely active. When we were there, it was just when it was open for the normal visitation. So we didn't really get a paranormal investigation into it, but it did definitely have that feeling of a very active location.
Yeah,
we investigated that too. We did get some. I wouldn't say it's crazy active, but we got, you know, a couple of good things. And the history is awesome. I mean, some great stories associated with that.
Oh, I know. I love that place.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hair weaves that they did, you know, that's what caught my attention. That was a little bit creepy that they would do art with the
hair. Oh, right.
Deceased people. And then something that Kat experienced was device like this. It would go off constantly. And I had this in my pocket, and we were just taking our coats off, but we hadn't even started. And they go, "Hey, your meter's going off," and it wouldn't stop. But it was only when the heat was on.
Yes, that's right.
I know.
It's natural causes.
You guys figured that out, Kat. I read that in your book. I thought, shoot, they figured that out just like we did. It didn't take too long, but it's that kind of energy I think that the spirits can use. So that building, every time the heat comes on, it's just full of EMFs.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. The EMF meters on a whole are not the most useful tool, but they can signal something. So you can't always ignore it, but when it goes off and it's constant, then you can probably find the source as being a natural or explainable source.
Right.
I don't know about you guys, but do you find that the tools being used, the new things being used in paranormal investigation are valid? I mean, I've used thermoimager. I thought maybe that has some basis, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
You know, honestly, as far as I go, I also have a FLIR camera for thermal imaging, but most of this new technology that people are using, I can't stand behind it. I mean, knowing like the stat pack, as I like to call it, you know, the brain box that you make out of a Radio Shack radio.
Yes.
In order to make it, you desolder the mute button and the scan button. So you essentially have broken the radio so that it is going to scan every frequency nonstop. So of course you're going to pick up words.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. Thank you.
EVP specialist, I actually did have somebody send me a file that they'd gotten from a Frank's box. And they were so excited because they were getting ready to go into the basement to do an investigation. And they caught this thing on their Frank's box. And they wanted me to verify that I'd heard the same thing they heard from it. And what it really literally was on the Price is Right, somebody saying, come on down.
Yes. Yes.
Like, that's a paranormal story. I'm like, no, that is the Price is Right.
You did it again. Kat, you did it again. It took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to ask, what is the best tool out there that you guys have come across or something that you think might be reliable? And Brandon, too, Brent can weigh in on this because you've used different stuff. The SLS cameras. And you talked about the stuff that does the infrared. It's going to at least show you the difference in temperature. I mean, you can't deny that. Whether that indicates a spirit, I don't know.
Yeah, the thermal camera it's really good at debunking because you can kind of tell where, if there's like cold air, you kind of tell where it's coming from, what might be kind of causing the draft and stuff like that. Yeah. So I think the only thing we ever caught that was really interesting was the two footprints. And the one house like nobody had gone into, there's like two cold spots on the floor that exactly look like shoe prints. Mm-hmm. And we go over there and you can see like the shoe prints are imprinted down in the carpeting, and there's a whole cold spot like the size of like where a person is, but the thermal doesn't pick it up, it picks it up on the floor. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing we thought was very odd.
Yeah, that was the house adjacent to Nick Fink's.
Yeah,
I warned those people about that. They were living in there and they had a young son. Well, they got to a point where their young son was waking up at night and something was telling him to hurt his parents and to burn the house down. So I warned them long before that ever happened that because we had come across some stuff that was right across the drive, right at Nick Fink's, and this is the house adjacent. So, I mean, it's close enough that I just felt like they should know. But it wasn't until their son started like having really bad experiences and that they paid attention to it. Have you ever been scared, Duchesne's, on an investigation?
as I already mentioned, the one time I've been scared on an investigation, I'm not sure what the one bed and breakfast and maybe West Virginia for you, but.
Oh,
well, the one bed and breakfast is in Newaygo, and God help me, I can't say the name of it. Not because I shouldn't say it. I can't pronounce it.
Oh,
Is it the Bell, whatever?
I've been there.
Yeah, I can't pronounce it either.
Just the bedroom that we were given to spend the night in. I just didn't like the feel of that. And that's not something that happens often. So I had a very hard time sleeping in that room. I would have to say the absolute scariest thing would have to be an experience I had in Gettysburg at a bridge called Solomon's Bridge. It's just outside of Gettysburg. And there's all these legends about, you know, this woman had a baby and she was carrying the baby and either she tripped and the baby fell into the water or she threw the baby in the water. The legend changes constantly of what actually happened. And so we went out in two cars. My dad and I were in one car and some of the other group was in the second car. And that group wanted to, when we get out there to start EVP, they wanted to be very motherly, you know, they wanted, oh, you know, so sorry this happened. And I'm of the frame of mind of, hey, I want to go with what the legend says. And the legend says, unfortunately, to be a little bit, not really provoking, but not nice.
Oh.
Yes. And what it is you're supposed to go out there and provoke the spirit, make her angry. And, you know, by saying things like, you know, it's a good thing that your baby is dead or whatever, just horrible stuff.
But that's what all
the kids were doing. Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it either.
Yeah, I know. I was still wet behind the ears. What do I know? I was thinking scientifically, you know, do what the legend says to see if we get the same reaction.
Sure.
Right. So I'm sitting there thinking scientifically, they're thinking like moms. You know, no, you can't say that. So they went on one side of the bridge and they were all nicey nice. We were on the other side of the bridge. We were not so nicey nice. And we go to leave and they were okay. We go to leave. There are no keys to the car. It vanished. The car will not start. So, and keep in mind, this is at night. So we're in the middle of nowhere. And so we get in the car and I made the stupid remark of, well, you know what? Just put the cabin lights on in the car. We at least still have light. Well, boom, there goes the light. So then I'm like, okay, great. Now we're in darkness. And then all of a sudden the van, and we're talking, we went in July. And it was a very hot, muggy night. The van turned ice cold to the point where you could see your breath.
Wow.
That was it for me. And, just the thought of, okay, I have made this entity mad. I succeeded, apparently. And she's not liking us right now. And I don't like the thought of something I can't see feeling threatening. So I started to apologize. I'm like, I am so sorry. I did not mean to hurt you. And within the third or fourth apology, suddenly the lights came back on. The car, all the power to the car was back. And then we heard something clink outside. So we had one of our windows down. We heard something clink. And there was my dad's keys to the car.
Yeah.
So trust me, it was a learning experience. It terrified me. But it was a learning experience that I will never do that again. That was long before Zach Bagans made it popular to be mean to the spirits.
Oh. Yeah.
I learned that long before he learned his lesson. And I'm not even sure he's learned it yet.
I don't think he's learned it because he's like, I get reactions. So I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah. If it's good for TV, it gets me ratings.
Yeah.
That's right.
I would say never disrespect the dead. The first team I was on after 4 hours of silence, our leader would start taunting and recommend that we taunt, that I taunt. And, you know, I talked to Brandon about that early on. I don't know how long I can do this way.
I don't agree with, because like you need to treat them with respect, like how you'd want to be treated, you know.
That's why
you don't know what you're, and when you provoke them, you don't know what response you're going to get from them, you know.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like you might be stranded out in the wilderness. It's dark. I actually wanted to ask the Reverend, because he's got more of an insight maybe than the rest of us on this, you know, how important is it respecting the dead? You know, what about these mass graves, which we're experiencing right now with COVID? Could that be a problem? Is that a disrespect when they put everybody in one big grave and fill it in?
I think sometimes if you don't have another option, then you're not really going to be all that disrespectful. Like some of the mass casualty events in the Civil War, they really didn't have any other options. So I wouldn't say that they were that they were necessarily disrespecting them, because they needed to get the bodies buried so that the town could be livable. Town of Gettysburg, after the battle, they were talking about the fact that the women couldn't walk around without having perfume under their noses and everything. Oh. And then they buried all the bodies, and then there was a strong rain, and they unburied the bodies themselves. So they had to go through and do it again. But my first rule in any investigation is always to respect the dead. I mean, I've made that a rule. I've kicked people off my team because they have provoked people. Mm-hmm. It is an absolutely forbidden thing for anyone that is investigating with me to give any disrespect to any spirit.
Yeah, that's good to know. Now, how important is this funeral ceremony, you know, saying words over the dead? You think that's real important?
Maybe like the blessing of the grave, that'd definitely be something that would be important to make it a nice sacred ground. If you're not able to give like individual blessing for each person, at least you could say, we're going to bless everybody who has died and is buried here. So I would say there should be some sort of a ceremony of some sort, just so the bodies can rest a little bit easier.
On that note, that reminds me of a case me and Wayne did. We were actually at a cemetery and in the building. We were getting a bunch of activity that kept leading us to this closet. So like eventually one of us asked, like, well, what's in that closet? And like, well, that's the ashes of like people that were unclaimed. And we keep them in that closet. So it's like, you know, like, it's like, that's one of the things we recommended, was to go in there and, you know, say something over them.
Yeah, cremated remains. Like no one's come to claim them. They never had any words said over them. And you know, all your different cultures have something that surrounds death ceremony. So I think it is an important thing. And I think sometimes it's missed out. If you're mutilated and cemented in the basement wall, you miss out on that and you're not at rest. That's what happened with my grandpa. He dug up bones that were cemented in basement walls and floors. And once he put them in a grave and said a few words over them, they were at rest. I think that is our ultimate goal when we're out. I know Kat's had some times when she's put people to rest, or sure seemed like it, the boy at Mackinac.
Yes, yeah.
You guys ever run across that, Duchesne's, where you take it to that next step after you've investigated and you find there's something there?
We actually had one investigation where the person was living in a converted old church. They had a recording studio in it, and they were using like the baptismal pool as like a hot tub for parties and whatever.
Oh no!
And they were talking about the fact that there were all these dark spirits running around in the basement.
I wonder why.
And right off the bat, we got there. There was all kinds of activity. We had toys moving. Every trigger item we could use was going crazy. We saw things in the basement, and we knew where the pastor's office was. And I had this idea for an experiment that I was going to do a rededication of church grounds from the pastor's office. So I went through and I did the ceremony to pretty much rededicate the church to God. And I did that. And from that moment on, we had absolutely nothing happen for the rest of the investigation. So the team was mad at me because I pretty much put an end to the hunting. But at the same time, they were pretty happy with us because they never had activity after that.
Oh, yeah. I've been with people like that. Some mediums where they're exercising the ghost. We just got started on the investigation and they're trying to put the spirit to rest. I thought I had a problem with that, but that is our ultimate goal. I thought it was maybe a little premature, but if they felt it at the time, I'm glad that she was doing that. We might not have evidence for the client, but you know, the goal is for the spirit to be at rest, and ultimately the living will be at rest.
And thinking that one, we had activity for like what the first hour or so, and then that's when I went down and did the dedication, and absolutely everything stopped. And they said they didn't have any problems afterwards either. So that would have been another situation, probably. In that one, it was more the disrespecting of the church and throwing parties in the baptismal pool. But, you know,
I would think if you have a team and you can include a clergyman, that's a good thing. I know, Kat, you were on a case where you had the deliverance.
Yes.
A whole different kind of ministry. I think sometimes the church doesn't recognize paranormal. They say it's not supposed to happen that way. You're supposed to die and you go someplace, but you don't just stick around.
Right. So
I don't know how the Reverend's been dealing with that or not, if that's a conflict of interest for you.
No, I actually was trained by Kenneth Deal, who was a pretty well-known demonologist. Mm-hmm. And he gave the explanation of where the activity would come was with him having a Catholic background, and he was a lay minister. But he was told by his bishop that their opinion was that these spirits that we're seeing are in purgatory. And because of the fact that they're in purgatory, they're still visible in our realm, but haven't passed completely into heaven.
Right.
So I have that feeling that they're kind of, well, in purgatory. I guess that's the best word you could use. They're in purgatory. So that would be why we might have that finite amount of time before you stop seeing a spirit, because you can't pay your penance forever.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you guys, all you ghost hunters, about cold spots, but Nikki, you already really answered it because you had that experience in the car there, that cold spot. But some of them that I've been reading about, they aren't just 10 degrees difference. They're freezing temperatures.
Freezing, yes.
We had a house that we were trying to buy in Kalamazoo that was going to become a bed and breakfast. We did a lot of investigations in there. And we had one instance when we were up in the attic, and I think the attic was probably supposed to be like, not really supposed to be, but the attic was about 110 degrees. And one of the investigators with his thermometer, they took a picture of it and showed that they'd had a ambient temperature reading up there of like 78 degrees, which would be a temperature change of like 30 to 40 degrees in the area. And it was just, they said it lasted probably about 5 seconds.
Yep. There's a cemetery called Nunica Cemetery,
right.
And Nunica Cemetery has had the biggest fluctuations of temperature I have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking dead of summer, again, hot, muggy night, and something will go off, either an EMF detector, something, and we will then try to document the temperature. And there's one time where we were in the 80s that night, and the temperature change went down into the 30s, and it was right beside a tree. I have seen a lot of temperature variations in different locations, but Nunica Cemetery, for some reason, that cemetery has the biggest variations that I have ever seen.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get out there. That's the one I was referring to that I read about, right? You know, you guys.
You can say hi to my parents.
Oh, you guys are familiar with Gary Eberle?
Yes.
I don't know. I think he might have been influential when you guys were getting started somehow. And Gary writes about the Ada Witch, Hell's Bridge, and also the Michigan Bell Building, which you guys, the article I wrote, I billed you as ghost or myth busters. I believe you are out there searching out the truth. Long hours to find the truth. Mm-hmm. And so if people buy your books, especially this one, I think is where you do a lot of myth busting in Grand Rapids.
That's probably the one that's got the most, yes.
Yeah.
So this one, if you're looking for the real truth, get this book. At least I would. I can't tell you what to do, but I already got it. I got the other one for Christmas. I picked this one up at CVC.
Yep, we heard whenever it goes to a new store, probably Kat gets the same thing. People decide to message you and go, hey, I just saw your book at Walgreens and stuff like that. Happens all the time.
Okay.
Never CVS though. I gotta say that's a first. That's pretty cool. Target, Walmart. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
CVS. All right.
Yeah. Well, we're pretty much out of time, so I need to run through the what I always do at the end, and that's shout outs. My shout out is to our previous guest, Cindy Heinen, and she has the Feminine Macabre book. Real thick book, all females wrote those articles, and they're variety of things. So another good book. Upcoming events, you guys want to have any upcoming events?
I'm just going to Paracon.
Sure.
That's about it for me.
You're going to Paracon. I think, Kat, are you going to Paracon? Yes.
I am going to be speaking at the Midwest Paracon in Flint, Michigan, November 4th. Gosh, I've got quite a few library presentations coming up. Let's see if I can find it. I don't know. I might have it. I might not. Oh, here we go. Okay. September 4th, I am doing a book signing at the Festival of Oddities. I'm going to be an oddity. That's in Charlotte, Michigan. And October 13th, the White Lake Community Library. October 19th, the Canton Public Library. October 26th, the Spring Lake District Library. And then November 4th is the Mid-Michigan Paracon. So I have a full schedule for the fall.
Excellent. And Duchesne's, you have your tours coming up.
Yeah, we've got our tours. Right now, our dates are up for October. We may add a few that are going to be earlier on in the season. Got several library presentations going on in October. Can't remember which ones, but we're going to be doing a lot of traveling for them, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we have any Paracons on our schedule right now.
No, too busy.
But are you working on another book?
Yes.
We actually have one that's probably be out, I would say, probably later this month, would you think, for Twisted History
of Kalamazoo? It could be that. Twisted History of Kalamazoo, I think I mentioned that to you.
Excellent.
Last time. Yep. There's another one on the Kalamazoo Insane Asylum. That's at the beginning editing stages. That one more has to deal with history and corruption at the beginning of the asylum days, the first 20, 30 years. There was a lot of corruption and abuse going on. So it's mostly a history book. And then the MSU Hauntings book, which I'm about 3/4 of the way done with.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to all that. And then for us, we have a Cajun spiritualist coming. And then I told you about the Michigan State person that's coming. And I'm looking forward to him, Ben Goldman with Afterlife Road. But because it's our 50th, I want to do a special shout out to Gene Gregory, who got us started in this three years ago. And Nate, Kelly, Davin, everybody here at WKTV, Tom, and especially Kim Colleen, who Kat's setting in for, and my good friend Brandon Jose, who's doing extra work to.
Yeah, doing all the editing.
He's doing editing and formatting to get this online and televised for us with the people here coordinating it. So, and then the final thought, we had enough of those already where we shared ideas about the cold spots and different things. So because I had one, I wanted to say, what was your best sign? Have you ever asked for a sign? And then and then had a real good sign come. But we'll save that for another time because we need to end the show. I always like to end with inspirational thought. And I got this one from Albert Schweitzer. He said something like this: at times our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us owes deepest thanks to those who have rekindled this light. You guys have sparked my light for years. You're all legends in the industry. I couldn't think of a better way of spending my evening than with you guys. So this has been a lot of fun for me. I hope we can do this again.
I do
one
too.
Second, though.
I love it.
We need to get the dog man story before we go.
Oh, Brandon wants to hear.
Dog man.
We talked about it. Yeah, okay, dog man in Kalamazoo area.
All right. Now I guess I have to tell it.
Yes. Yes.
I believe it would have been probably, well, it had to have been 93 because that would be when I first started getting into ghost hunting. And my best friend, Bob, who is with Michigan Night Stalkers, he and I had Kalamazoo Ghost Hunters Club. And we were trying to go out to do stuff that you shouldn't do. Yeah. We had to go into an abandoned house.
Oh, yeah.
It was out.
Without permission.
Yeah, no permission. Just go in. You know, that's the way it used to be. We're getting ready to do that. We were young and dumb. But as we were going down the road, we had a 77 Lincoln Continental. And we're driving through town, and as we're going through, my buddy said, dude, you got to stop and go back. Did you see that dog? So I was like, yeah, sure. So we turned around as fast as you could in a boat. Well, car, but it's a boat. And we turned around, we saw the dog again, and it had roadkill in its mouth and directed the car. So we were pointing directly at it, and it got up on its hind legs and took off with the food in its mouth across the field. And luckily, we weren't organized enough to go chasing after it with our cameras, which was our plan. Because I don't think it would have turned out very well for some teenagers to try to confront the cryptoid.
Yeah.
So we just saw it. It took off running, and we were going to try to follow it like idiots.
Was that near the Allegan Forest?
No, that was actually just outside of Portage area.
Okay. Well, we have.
You want to hear something interesting? We now live in the Allegan. Our property is now part of the Allegan State Game Area.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Keep your eyes open.
Yeah.
Been a great show. Kathleen Rydell Tetson, thanks so much for co-hosting. Brandon Jose, 50 and counting. This was a milestone for us. And like I said, I couldn't think of anyone better than Nikki and the Reverend Robert Duchesne. Thanks so much. Peace out.
Peace.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Very welcome.
Family-owned Palermo Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast. Located at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.